everybody, we're back. This is episode 132 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I'm Tom Hunyadi. You may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, and I'm here with my partner in crime, a backwards traveler, Andy Nichols. Andy, my friend, what's going on?
Recording on a Sunday, and just this is going to be a very interesting one.
Yeah, no, this is fun. You know, we'll talk about that in a second, but you know, we had Record Store Day yesterday.
Yep.
And, you know, we both went out. I'm a little tired this morning. You probably can still see it in my eyes, I guess. But, yeah.
what time were you on your line there at your local place? Three?
We got in line at 1:45 in the morning. And wow, there was already four people in front of us.
No so. Kidding. Now, when you guys do that, do you bring chairs and crap?
Oh, yeah.
And then what do you do? Like, what do you do with all that crap? Like, once you got to carry it the rest of the time you're there, right?
No, put it back in the car.
Oh, you can. And then hold your spot.
Yeah, we're all friendly there. I mean, a lot of us know each other from years of doing this, you know. So
you see the same people.
You see the same crowd, you know, and, you know, conversations.
So you don't mind that small talk stuff?
Not always. No. I don't mind. I mean, there's times where, yeah. I mean, there's times where I'm like, okay, you know what? I just want to close my eyes for a minute, you know. But yeah, there's times where I don't mind it. We're excited, you know, usually for the day. So, and sometimes some of these people are pretty cool, you know. And
what time did your store open up? 9 a.m.?
7
a.m. Okay.
Yeah. And before it was 9. So if you got there at 2, you're pretty much, you know, going to be first in line. I mean, now that the stores are opening up a little bit earlier, you know, people are starting to get there a little earlier. Like the guy that was first, he got there at 10 o'clock at night, the time right as they closed.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but.
Then once you got into the store, I mean, how long now were they? Because I know certain stores set regulations on how many people they would let in.
Right.
They'd give you like whatever, 20 minutes, then you got to go. Like, what was it like?
Well, you know, the thing is they let the first 15 people in. By the time they opened, there was already a line of over 100 people. So they let 15 in at a time. Now, the cool thing about the Zia record store that I go to is they'll have they have everything in rows in alphabetical order.
Sure.
So you can just shuffle through line, grab what you want alphabetically, and then you're done in 10 minutes, you know, unless you want to do a discount double check and make sure that you didn't forget anything.
Right. You can zip through pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Thanksgiving dinner, you know, you it's hours, you know, of waiting and then, you know, 5 minutes of eating, you know.
right.
And it's really quick. It's beautiful. There's no shuffling through boxes, you know.
No, the organization is really nice.
It is. It's really cool how they got it set up. I mean, you are in and out so quick that it's like, you know, the last 6 hours were a blur. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty cool. And then, you know, then I went back to work.
You know, right. So. No, and no McCartney releases for this drop.
No, there was really no Beatles related releases for this drop.
So they halved it though. There was one, was it June 12th, and the other one's July 17th. Is the second one
14th, I think, or something like that.
So, you know, and was that because of COVID, or just I guess they wanted to break it up?
Yeah, why not? I mean, there were so many titles.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it would be hard for a store to hold all of those titles. So, yeah, I think it was smart to break it up.
Yeah, I did. I went for the first time in probably 5 years. I know Tom's been a stalwart and supporter of the Record Store Day thing. And I am, too. I don't like doing lines and stuff. So, but I did do it because there was something I really wanted to get. So I went to my local store. I didn't camp out overnight like Tom. I got there at 10 a.m. and there was probably about 100 people online. But by 11 o'clock, I was in. Still mm-hmm. found what I wanted, and I got out. So
that's great. Yeah, I mean, those bigger titles, you know, I'm sure The Who was a big title. You know, I'm sure they did, you know, multiple copies of that title.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that the album that I got for Ethan, The Creation, they only had the one copy.
Did you get it?
So, and that's why I think, you know, my wife and I think it's worth getting in line early, because you never know how many copies they're going to have of these titles.
Right. And I wish I think the stores have done a better job of telling you how many they're getting in terms of quantity, but over the years, but I know back in the day, you never knew.
Well, and that's the thing. They won't do that because there's a chance you might not go. You know, they're going to want you to get to the store.
You know? Right. You know, they tell you we've only got 20 of this or 10 of this, you know, then they're overplaying their hand.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a good chance that you're still going to get, you know, what you want. Not everybody's going to go after that Who title. Not everybody is going after that Prince or Elton John or whatever title.
I heard people online talking about some kind of electronica stuff and titles and artists.
Right.
I've never even heard of. So
yeah, exactly. You see a lot of the younger crowd going after those other titles, which is fine. You know, good. Let them go for those titles, and hopefully, then we get what we want.
just leave the classic rock realm alone, please. Yeah, for us old.
So you what else did you get? You also got the ELP.
I got the ELP. I got the limited edition. Well, they're all limited edition. A picture disc version of ELP's Tarkus.
Okay,
1971. It was $30, and the Who one was $40, something like that. But again, to your point, once you get through, it's like Thanksgiving dinner. You're in, and I think the way that my store was lined up was they have like a front part of the store and a rear part of the store, and the record store day portion was in the back. So once you saw what you want, I mean, it was pretty much all pick through. I saw the two that I wanted. The Elton John one was, I would wanted that one too, but that one was already gone. The Sergeant one, the Sergeant Zip. Yeah, that was already gone, which I think you grabbed. Right. Yeah. That was already gone. So I think I might have spent a grand total of like less than 10 minutes in the actual record store portion. And then I was out of there. It's like you said, quick. So I was happy. Yeah. I was happy for what it was, you know? So.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I mean, excuse me. It's, you know, something my wife and I enjoy doing. My wife loves records too. So, you know, I don't go home with a bunch of records feeling bad we think it's a lot of fun, I was going to get the Kinks Percy, but I'm not the biggest picture disc fan, so I ended up passing on that one.
But
I enjoyed what I got. I got the Prince, the Elton John. There's a 90s band called the Lemonheads that I got their debut album, and a heavy metal band called The Sword, and I got their debut album. It was successful for me.
Good.
And that's why we get in line as early as we do.
we'll I have to check the titles for July, but I'm sure we'll be doing it again.
Yeah. There's my wife is really excited about the Cat Stevens. It's the Harold and Maude soundtrack.
Yeah.
She's excited about that. And there's a Judas Priest title that I'm sure I'll pick up. So yeah, we'll be back in line.
Of course, you guys will.
Anyways. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. But on today's show, I watch other podcasts, not a lot. Not as many as our friend Martin Quibble, but there is one I watch. It's called Three Sides of the Coin. It's a Kiss show, and they did a show recently where it's a one word description. And what that is they take the albums, and we're going to take the main canon here, and we're going to describe it in with one word, and we can use compound words as well, but it's one word. Now that one word can describe the album, it can describe your experience with the album, it can describe the story of the album. So you just don't have to limit it to one thing.
One it's context, just
you,
right.
one con- yeah thank you and yeah so it can be several things, so you just don't have to limit it to the one thing, like Andy said. And I think it could be fun. Now, if there's any English majors out there, and if you know, don't
give us, apologize. Yeah. Don't crucify us.
Yes.
Tom mentioned this topic a few weeks ago, and I'm like, yeah, this would be great. You know, I'm not going to sit here thumbing through Webster's, you know, dictionary looking up
words. Exactly.
But yeah, it was challenging, and I only just finished my list before we started recording today. So, but it really, to look at it this way, as Tom framed the episode, not just, you know, what, you know, it could be what you think about it, or, you know, not limiting to one thing was fun, because then you could think about different ways how you
different categorize
the record. And I'm sure that we will probably hit upon several of similar word choices, maybe not exactly the same word.
Right.
But I'm sure you and I will probably have similar words for certain albums.
Exactly. Yeah. It would be interesting to see how we vary or you know, differ.
Yeah.
Or anything the same. So, I mean, it definitely put my thinking cap on, and hopefully it'll put your thinking cap on too. So
absolutely.
When you're done watching in the comments, you know, you can leave, you know, your one word to describe these albums, if you want to.
And if you've been following our show, it's, as Tom mentioned, it's the main canon. So if you've been following our Ranking the Track series, it's the same exact order of those albums that we've ranked, minus the the odds and sods singles and the decade, you know, stuff at the end of each decade. But basically we're following the same format of the Ranking the Tracks. So no Fireman, no classical, no live albums, none of that.
Right. So just to get the ball rolling, I'll start with the McCartney record. And what I put my word is persevere. And that meaning that is, you know, we all know that he loved being a Beatle, and he was just at the top of his game at the Beatle. And then when John announced he wanted a divorce, and, you know, he just, you know, he went through his depression. We all know that. And, you know, if it wasn't for the help of Linda, maybe we wouldn't have gotten the McCartney record. You know, maybe we wouldn't have gotten such a great song, and maybe I'm amazed, but you know, he had his challenges, and he got over it, and you know, he persevered really, and to create the McCartney record, and to continue his career, the start of his solo career really, and you know, that's just, I think, you know, he rose to the occasion. I mean, not really in creativity, but he, you know, rose to the occasion as in, you know, he got out of his funk, and you know, continued his passion for music.
So very good word choice to open it up. My one word to describe McCartney, the first album, would be the word family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's exactly what he kind of needed at the time to help him get through that album. And if you remember reading the press release when the album came out, they actually asked him what three words describe it. And it was home, family, and love.
Exactly.
So, I think family checks the box for me for that record. Again, not so much, and persevere, family, you take your pick. It's they both kind of all mean the same thing. He persevered to do it, and he needed his family to kind of get him to that point.
Exactly. Right.
And that was my word choice for McCartney. I think it represents all those themes that Tom mentioned, that I mentioned, that opened up his solo career.
Mm-hmm. All right. Why don't you go ahead and start with Ram?
Okay, Ram. This was the one where I picked the noun. Okay, this is
okay.
So for Ram, my one word to describe Ram is the word Beatles, because to me, this could be just like another Beatles record. I wasn't going to throw another adjective in there, because to me, Ram has always been like another Beatles record to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's full of everything. It could be like more of Abbey Road to me. It's how wonderful the record is. So when I think of Ram, the first thing that pops into my head is a Beatles record. And that's the word that I wrote Beatles down, because it's him going, you know, he came out with McCartney. He got, you know, he really wanted to kind of get a little more professional, get some session players again, kind of get that band feeling again rolling.
Right.
Early foundations of Wings period. So Uncle Albert, Backseat of My Car, all these kind of Beach Boy, Abbey Road type qualities to it. So I went with Beatles for Ram.
Yeah, great. I was close to doing that, really close. My word was just creative. You know, he just was really You know, with all of these different varieties of songs, you know, the musicians that he brought in, they were all creative as well. They brought in their own, you know, mix and feel for the songs. They were able to be creative. Paul didn't really necessarily tell them what to do. They let them be creative on these songs as well. I think Denny Sy will say there was only one time that Paul suggested what for him to play.
Right.
And, you know, so everybody was allowed to, you know, be creative with this record. And and what had happened was you got pretty much, like you said, I mean, a Beatles feel kind of a record, you know. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Where you got the Wildlife.
Yeah. Wildlife. I put Rushed.
Oh, go ahead. I did too, so I'm going to let Tom take the floor.
Okay.
I Rush was my word too, so take
right.
it away.
That's funny.
I love it.
Listen, 2 weeks to do a 10 days, whatever it was, to do a record. That could be I'm not saying Wildlife is a bad record because it was rushed or because it was recorded quickly, let's say, but you know what? This is your debut album with your new band. Why take that? Why take that approach? You know what I mean? You had good songs that you could have finished from the Ram sessions. A Love for You would have fit nicely on Wildlife. I think.
Yeah.
You know, you could have recorded that. You could have maybe retooled Rolled All Night. You know, who knows? However, you know, you did those songs. They were rushed in a way. I mean, the record was rushed to be put out. And, you know, with a little bit more time, I think this could have been 10 times better of a record, you know, if you would have maybe taken, you know, a month or two rather than, you know, 2 weeks.
2 weeks. And I mean, I think it probably is the only time in McCartney's career where he put an album out so fast, right? In 2 weeks time, which in response to why, you know, I think he says it in the McCartney interview from 1980, I think, which was Vic, he said that, you know, he just, well, because I had read that Dylan did an album really quick.
Right.
Now, which Dylan album he's talking about. I don't know. It could be National Skyline.
I thought it was like New Morning or something like that.
Or maybe New Morning, which could have been New Morning after Self-Portrait. But he says
it could have been one of those.
Somewhere in that period there. But he says it was in response to Dylan putting out an album quick. And it just, I chose the same word. So I had a feeling we'd be similar on a couple of word choices, but there's our first one. Rushed, because it was rushed.
Right.
And I said, there's not that there's bad songs on it, but you really could have. And that going back to our kind of our last great first worst episode, it's why I chose it to be his first worst for me personally. But agree with you on all points on why Rushed was our mutual word choice for that record.
Right. All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and start with Red Rose Speedway?
Red Rose. Okay. For those of you out there in YouTube and TV land, you know this is up there for me. But I do have a cheater word. It's not a hyphenated word. I'm cheating a little bit. Right. The word I've used for this is called training wheels. It's training wheels. Okay, so it's not one word. It's not hyphenated, but I'm cheating because. And I call it that because it really is Wings progressing as a band. Now, as the fanboy aside, I love all the pop silliness of the record, Dragonfly, the medley, which Tom hates, and I love. But it's Wings in progress, progressing as a band. So that's kind of why I think it has that training wheels quality to it. You know, they still weren't there yet, working out everything together with the band. And then, of course, it changed later on. So it's a band in progress growth from Wildlife for sure. And not clearly a different band once the next record comes. So, but again, as we've learned in the reevaluation period of the Wings Live box set from 71 to 73, a really hot band when it counted to be live. So, but I think Training Wheels sums up Red Rose Speedway because they were still, I mean, number one album, but still not really there yet.
Right. Well, and you know, you mentioned my word in your whole thing right there, and that was progress. And that was my word. It's progress. And
oh, good.
Yeah. I mean, I think between Wildlife and Red Rose Speedway, it's night and day. Really, you know, and something with the addition of Henry McCulloch in there. Just to add to the progression of the band, you know, you hear stories about how, you know, Denny and Lane and Henry, a lot of times they weren't even tuned. They didn't have the right, you know, the guitars weren't even tuned properly.
Right.
You know, during their live, during their live shows, you know, and then now and then to hear, you know, the progression into Red Rose Speedway, you know, I think it's night and day. I mean, I think they were becoming a tight knit group.
Yeah.
And, you know, by that point in time, and then obviously, you know, the sessions didn't start that great, because we all know that Glenn Johns left, you know, probably because of, you know, the activity that was going on.
Too much of that. Yeah.
But then they went out on tour and they, you know, they became even a tighter group. And then they finished the record. And
I think Henry's arrival had a lot to do with that in terms of congealing as a band, really, in 72, when they really joined. Because this record really was made in throughout all of 72 while they were on tour.
Yeah, exactly.
It's out at the beginning of, it's out in spring of 73, but it was really made all throughout 72.
Right.
And an original double LP, as we both know. Mm-hmm. But progress. That's an excellent word choice for Red Rose.
Okay, Band on the Run, I'll start, and the word I picked was Triumph. This is, you know, finally McCartney getting, and the band, if you will, getting the recognition they deserve, the critical success. I think he probably felt his back was to the wall, band members leaving, doubts being set in. Hey, you can't do an album with just the three of you guys, you know, and with one person being half a musician, really, just still learning her trade.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, I'm sure he felt a lot of, you know, stress or pressure to make a great album. But you know what? He did make a great album. As fatigued as we may be on this album, it's still a great album, and it triumphs. I mean, it you know, soared to the top of the charts. Well, how many times? Twice? Three times? Was it?
At least, I think, three times.
Yeah. You know, so that's what I thought of the rest. As soon as I thought of Band on the Run, I thought Triumph.
Triumph. Good, excellent word choice. You know, to quote John Lennon, you know, Paul make a good record when he's scared into it.
Right.
You know, and certainly that is the case with this one. My word choice for Band on the Run is Determination. Because I think coming out of the whole experience with the first incarnation of Wings, the both guys leaving, he was really determined to make a really good record. And he says as much in the Wingspan documentary, you know, he was like, you guys leave. Okay, fine. I'm going to show you. We're going to make the best album we've ever made.
There you go. You know,
so he was really determined to make a record. And that's why I think Determination sums up the Band on the Run record. Again, and then just, you know, picking up a family, going to Lagos, Nigeria, getting mugged, you know, everything that kind of went on with the making of that record. And then still to come out of it, come back and produce it. I think, you know, that's Triumph, Determination, I think, are great words that describe this, this album.
Yeah, you know, probably the reason why we didn't get an album in 74, because just the album was so successful that
I mean, it comes out at the end of it comes out in December of 73. So he really, and we always talked about it was McGear, the lost album of Seven Wings album of 74, but he had hit such a, you know, peak with that record at the end of 73. He didn't need to do anything in 74. The album sold itself.
Exactly. That's why we only got one song, Junior's Farm, really.
Right.
Under the McCartney and Wings moniker.
Sure.
Okay, so you're up for Venus and Mars.
Happiness in the Homeland, yeah. okay, I was thinking about this one because concept album started to kind of come to have different words that I kind of came up with, but the one that I kind of came up with, because it kind of goes with the theme of the album, this wasn't so much about the making of the album, what I think about it, it's more of the theme of the record, and the word I chose was futuristic. Because you've got the whole sci-fi concept here, kind of, you know, Venus and Mars, Spirits of Ancient Egypt, you know, all kind of very concept album-y. And I was thinking, but then you've got, like, you gave me the answer and Treat Her Gently, but the whole space time travel concept still sticks with me with this record. You know, the lyrics in it, you know, Venus and Mars Reprise, you know, Starship 2-1.
Even like Magneto and Titania, man, you know, in a way.
Exactly. I thought about Magneto and Titania. Very kind of futuristic sci-fi. But the word I did choose was futuristic. Because just in terms of the concept of the album, not so much about what I think about it or whatever, but it just futuristic, because it, to me, it was just a different kind of a direction, a different kind of concept. To me, it was the first time Paul legitimately tried to do a concept kind of album, opening, you know, bookending it with opening up with Venus and Mars and doing a reprise on Open Side 2. So that's kind of why I chose that one.
Okay.
Different, but what do you got?
Right. I put just Soaring. I mean, at this point in time, you know, they were successful with they had the takeoff with Band on the Run, and then also with Junior's Farm, which is a big hit. This comes out, they get the number one with Listen What the Man Said. Venus and Mars is number one. I mean, these guys, I mean, they're soaring. They're on an all-time high right now. I mean, the success is just coming in fast and furious.
Well, I think this is where they, this is really where they hit it big time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they could do no wrong, really, at this point in time. So, like I said, they're taking off. I mean, so I couldn't really use that as a one word description.
Right.
But you know, again, I mean, these at this point in time, they are soaring. You know, this band is, you know, really, you know, having success, no doubt at all.
And with the success, which really starts with the success of Band on the Run, which carries through 74. Junior's Farm, and then this new lineup of Wings really, you know, just starts flying, and they hit, they start up, they open up a world tour in 75.
Yeah, exactly.
And they hit the ground running, you know?
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. So, yeah. Okay.
You're up. Speed of Sound.
Yeah. Speed of Sound. I chose Selfless because here, you know, McCartney is sharing the wealth.
Sharing the wealth. Right.
You know what I mean? So everybody gets a lead vocal. I mean, Denny's getting, you know, more vocals as well. You know, everybody's contributing, you know, excuse me. So again, it's you got that band feel in McCartney, and it all starts from the top. You know what I mean? So he, you know, he said, let's get everybody get a lead vocal. Let's, you know, come out, we're gonna go tour, so then that way he doesn't have to do everything. You know, they're already on the tour, so really, so the continuation of the second leg. But go ahead.
But that kind of comes into your the point you just made about how they were already on tour in the making of this album. Kind of led that fact kind of drove my word choice for this record, and that word is craftsmanship. Because I was going to go with Rushed, but then I used it for a while. Like, but craftsmanship, because not that the songs are bad, it's a great album with number one, but to me the fact that it was produced in the middle of a tour, it was done very kind of quickly. The delegation of music and singing to other members, I think, was kind of okay. Like, I'm busy, we're doing a tour, I'm going to give everybody a chance to shine this record.
Right.
So, but the songs on there, I mean, again, they're not bad, but it just, to me, they strike of craftsmanship, you know. They're all great songs, you know, but like, you know, Beware My Love, excellence. But to me, they're just, and again, that's a word that John has kind of used to describe Paul's songwriting, is craftsmanship, you know. And I think that Speed of Sound, to me, has that quality to it, because it was kind of rushed. It was done in the middle of a tour. So it's like, all right, and even though he's Paul McCartney and his songs are going to be great anyway, let me just jot these songs off real quick. Why Don't Junk Go, Beware My Love, Must Do Something About It, Warm and Beautiful. Like, it's all done. It just, again, it's all done sandwiched in the middle of a world tour. And I think that the record suffers a little bit. I mean, if you can call a record, again, we're talking McCartney level here. So the record has a little bit of a dip in qualities because of that. So craftsmanship is why I chose that word.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. I mean, you got a number one hit and number three hit on there, you know.
Not too bad. That's not bad craftsmanship.
Not bad for a rushed album.
Not bad at all. You know,
so, you know. Okay, so London Town, I believe that's
you're up.
I'm up. I put Unexpected because of the fact that, you know, you've got these, you know, little, you know, guitar, you know, it's rock and roll, really, you know, Junior's Farm, a lot of rock and roll on Venus and Mars. You got some heavy hitters on Speed of Sound. And the tour, world tour, is very rock heavy. And then you get London Town, and it's...
Whoa!
Yeah, I mean, it's very folksy. You know, it's very synth heavy. you know, so, you know, you got, you know, two, I mean, I kind of call them lightweight rockers on there, and then that's pretty much it.
With,
you know,
name and address.
I've had enough. I mean, a little guitar in more Smooth than the Grey Goose, but, I mean, very unexpected, with this record, you know, with the music on there. So yeah, that was
okay. Unexpected for London Town. Okay. My word for London Town is, melancholic.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's the opening chords of that record. When you hear the opening bars of London Town, to me, it sets the mood immediately for the entire record. Tom's point about very folksy, you know, London Town with a little luck, Backwards Traveler, Deliver Your Children,
right.
Sing songy, melancholic. Yeah, melancholy. And I think the record has a very melancholy feel to it. You know, just think about it. You know, you can just put that record on and you can see the gray fog all over London. You know, I can anyway. And I've always thought of that. I mean, I know, again, sad songs say so much, right?
Elton? Right.
So I think that that record has a lot of melancholy qualities to it. Mm. Again, the rockers in there, but there's only two, as Tom mentioned, but. Right. You know, especially with A Little Luck and London Town and, you know, the synth heaviness of the record overall, I think lend itself to that quality. So definitely a melancholic record for me.
All right, cool. All right, you start with Back to the Egg.
Hey, my word for Back to the Egg, bitter.
wow.
Bitter, because okay. he was obviously, you know, London Town, he didn't really get really good commercial reviews. It sold well, right? But he didn't get the journalists weren't, you know, oohing and aahing over it, right? Mm-hmm. So okay, here's he gets the band back to a new version of Wings, and he's gonna throw okay, punk is all the rave, and he's like, okay, you know what? You didn't like my last record? Screw all you guys. I'm just gonna go crazy, and again, Back to the Egg has other qualities. It's got some nice ballads in it, but the overall feel of that record is a real high energy. Record full of, you know, a lot of bitterness, you know, spinning on and, you know, lots of really aggressive music on that record, you know, for sure, you know?
Right.
So I've just always felt that's a very bitter record. Mm. So that's why I chose Bitter for Back to the Egg.
Okay. I picked, Conclusion. This is it. This is, you know, we didn't know it at the time that was going to be the last Wings record, but unfortunately it was. I mean, we'd like to have seen more work from Juber and Holly on Paul Records as Wings, but I mean, this is it. I mean, this closed the chapter on this album, closed the chapter on Wings, and I think it was it's become as the Back to the Egg becomes more and more popular, I think as it has, I mean, it's getting definitely more people are looking at it differently and saying that it is a good record, and hopefully, you know, when we do get the archive set, it's going to get reviewed favorably as all of these albums have.
You know it will.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people are going to say that it was a nice closing chapter to his band, Wings from the 70s.
And I mean, do you really, I mean, at 40 years is hindsight, but do you really think Wings could have continued in the 80s? I mean, obviously so many things.
Sure they could have. I mean, they could have adapted to change of styles and music. And they showed us throughout, they could do any kind of style of music.
Cause you look at Tug of War and Pipes of Peace. And you've got songs that Wings worked on,
right?
Scattered all over those records. So,
right,
you know, it could have Wings existed into the 80s.
They could have adapted into the 80s. They could still have brought in a Hugh Padgham to produce an album. You know what I mean? It's still Paul McCartney,
right? Because wasn't on those records. The plan was to bring in George Martin to do the next Wings record,
right?
Outside of McCartney too, right? Separate, you know. So. Interesting to think about an 80s Wings sound and what that would have sounded like. I mean, obviously we can know because we haven't, but just if those guys were on there, what would it have been like? Would it have been any different?
You see so many of these videos, especially of British videos where you see the bands on a synthesizer, you know, in these videos, they were already doing that. They were already doing that, you know?
Yes.
They could have adapted easily into some kind of 80s sound, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then and the videos and all the technology that was already at the forefront, they were doing so. They definitely could have. I just think by the time that happened, you know, his family's really, you know, he really wanted to spend time with his family. His son was young, and to go through the whole thing again. And at that point, it had been 10 years.
But then, but again, they didn't have to tour either. I mean, they, you know, obviously we know what happened to the 80 tour or the Japan thing. And it sounds like they were going to continue after we talked with Juber.
Yeah.
You know, going out on an American tour with on the success of coming up
is a big hit. I mean, so exactly. Wings in 1980 was still a machine.
Very hot. I mean, they were still hot, you know.
You know, absolutely. And that's so. Again, they probably, and then just to have everything just, you know, pull the plug. And how much did John's death play in that? Probably quite a lot.
Yeah, and I can see him. You know, the whole excuse. Well, you know, the Japan bus. Maybe that was just my way of ending Wings. I don't believe that one second.
I don't believe that's historical revisionism.
Yeah,
that's. I agree with you.
Yep. Okay, McCartney 2, you are up.
McCartney 2. Funky. That's it's the best word I could think about it, because the record is so experimental, full of synths and stuff, which I know that our friend Ethan Alexanian loves. It was his favorite McCartney record. Yeah. We had him on when we did Ranking the Tracks. It's just a funky record.
Right.
From start to finish. Bogey music and, you know, where you're never going to hear stuff like that on any other McCartney record, you know.
Right.
Especially it's like bogey music and your dark room. And of course, it's got its ballads, Waterfalls and One of These Days.
One of These Days.
But Nobody Knows. I mean, McCartney doing all those kind of different vocals is what makes that record funky. And to me, that's just the best word I could think of to describe it.
Yeah. Well, again, you said the word in your whole spiel there, and experimental. I mean, that's just the first thing that comes to mind when I hear, when I think of McCartney too. It's just experimental, and the fact, like you said, I mean, he's just experimenting with all these sounds with the synthesizer, really. I mean, and with his vocals. I mean, with the echo on the way, and you know, even dark room, you know, all these different ways of
check my machine.
Absolutely. I mean, he was just having fun experimenting with the, you know, with the sounds and having a good time doing it. So I mean, experimental is really all I think of when I think of McCartney too, you know. So
easy.
Tug of War,
you're up.
Okay. Yes, Monumental. He's with George Martin coming back, Emmerich, you know, all these great musicians, you know, Stevie Wonder, you got all these great
Dave Maddox
and you know, the other two are Gad and Ringo. And Ringo, you know what I mean? It's just all of these monumental, you know, people coming in and working on an album, to have success again in 81, again with a number one hit, a top 10 hit. Everything was still working. McCartney, his lyrics, I think, were even better on this record than some past records, you know. So I think he was still clicking, and obviously he had George Martin to help him and to guide him. Hey, this is good, this is crap, you know. And the results in my opinion were monumental. Absolutely.
Okay, my word is more to describe the mood of the album for me, and my word choice for Tug of War is mournful. Mournful, and that's pretty much because of the title track, Tug of War, and of course Here Today.
Right.
Goodness, there's some great moments of pop and, you know, awesomeness on this record, you know, Take It Away and Ebony and Ivory and Wanderlust and The Pound Is Sinking, but to me, everything from the album cover, you know, Paul sitting there with the cans and listening to Tug of War and Here Today, obviously his first musical statement after the loss of John Lennon. I just, to me, that whole, the entire album is mournful. Great moments of joy and awesome and fantastic pop, uplifting pieces, but the mood of the record is mournful. And that one, again, these are first things that pop into my head when I think about these records. Yeah. That's what I think of. I think it's mournful, but I mean, just You said monumental. It is very, 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 very monumental because just a great success. But this one, certain album, we think like, it's funny. You say monumental because of the success, whereas I go to the mood of the record. So it all depends on what you, how you individually interpret the record.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, we're going to Pipes of Peace, and your turn.
Okay, I can't wait to hear your word for this one. I went with the commercial for Pipes of Peace because to me it's just getting Michael Jackson involved, who was the the biggest star of the day. Right. Obviously going for a big number one hit with Say Say Say. To me, the album is just littered with big time commercial selling qualities to it, you know, that were trying to draw the album. Say, Michael Jackson's here, great video for it. Pipes of Peace, big commercial hit in England, but Say Say Say, and the drawing power of Michael Jackson to me on this record in this period is, I even think this I mean, he had Wonder on Tug of War, and he had Jackson on Pipes of Peace, but I think the attention in terms of star power went for Michael Jackson,
of course.
Even though Tug of War did better as the album, the media attention seemed to go right to Michael Jackson and then is doing this, and they had the video. Right. So that's why I chose the word commercial for Pipes of Peace.
All right. Well, I got a C word as well. And that's a continuation, really, because it is just a continuation of Tug of War. When you think about it, I mean, half of the songs, including Say, 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 The Man, I mean, they were all part of those original Tug of War sessions. That were just, I don't know if leftovers would have been a good word for for Pipes of Peace, but you kind of, in a way, you feel that because you got, all of these songs that are pretty much carrying over to this album. And it just feels like a continuation. I mean, really only what 4 or 5 songs were recorded for this album?
Just for this album.
Half of them were done already,
Right. So.
Yeah. But I like yours too, commercial, because but unfortunately the commercial, how commercial Say 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 was ended up not reflecting or helping the album.
No, it didn't.
Which is crazy because a lot of times a big, huge hit results in a big album.
Right. You know? And in this case, that did not work.
Right.
In this country anyway.
Right. All right, press the play. I've got two words here.
Oh, we're skipping Broad Street.
Oh, you know what? No, sorry. I'm out of order. Broad Street, thank you. Broad Street, I'll start. My word for Broad Street is mistake. It was a mistake for him to do the movie. I think it was a mistake for him to redo Beatles songs. A lot of that whole thing, as great as the soundtrack is, I think his time and energy should have been surrounded by, I've got No More Lonely Nights. I've got Not Such a Bad Boy. I got
No Values.
Let's make an album surrounding
those songs,
right? Those songs, instead of redoing a very poorly Silly Love Songs, The Long and Winding Road. Let's concentrate on continuing growing off of these one great song and two good, decent songs, and let's see what we can, come.
In other words, making a soundtrack of all new music.
Right. And in a perfect world, for me anyways, Broad Street would have never happened. So my word is mistake.
All right. Mine's in a similar family there. My word for Broad Street is disjointed. Because it's the whole thing is disjointed from this time, the idea of the plot to this and the soundtrack, which is just all over the place, revisiting Beatles songs but No One Lonely Nights being like the centerpiece of the whole record and the film, really. But everything kind of, half baked revisits of the wing, the wings of the Beatles. Some of them were good, like For No One and Here, There, and Everywhere. Beautiful.
Sure. Sure.
But it's just the whole record. I'm just talking about the record here, not the film. The record right. has a disjointed quality to it. You know, and the film does too, but it's just because we can, Tom said mistake. I said disjointed. I mean, I know there's Broad Street fans out there, so
yeah,
big ones.
Hey, listen, you know, obviously like McCartney, we got a great song with Maybe I'm Amazed, and like Broad Street, we got this, you know, again, an equally incredible song in No More Lonely Nights.
Sure.
You know, so there are some bits and pieces to take away, you know, in creativity and success and or whatnot. But as a whole, yeah.
Just, nope.
Yeah. Okay, Press to Play. You are up, my friend.
Press to Play. Slick.
Okay.
So now when I say slick, I mean in terms of the production, because that's right. the one thing I can't really get my ears around when I listen right. to the record. From start to finish, it's the pageant production, the 80s slickness of this record is why I just, to me, and again, it's probably my least favorite McCartney record, you know, if start right. to finish. So the slickness of this production, right. again, Paul adapting to the 80s and trying to do what the 80s, what represent what the 80s period was, and bringing Pageman and then getting Collins and stuff on there on these tracks. It just, to me, Press to Play, it's an album full of slick sheen production that it doesn't go anywhere for me.
Right.
So,
and again, you're doing a great job taking my word and utilizing it in your description. And that's production, you know, the word, I mean, it's, when I think of Press to Play, I think of the production of that record. And it very much is a, you know, that's it with the record. I mean, it's, you know, you listen to those stripped down demos or takes or whatever you want to call them on YouTube. You can listen to those early, you know, the early version of that record, and you just hear the difference. I mean, it's just a stripped down, yeah. nice, you know, I would have loved to hear it worked off of that, but yeah, I mean, with Hugh Padgham, you know, coming in and just taking that album in a whole different direction, you know, even though he was there from the start, and you know, just turning it into something completely different. It's, yeah, for me, it's production. And
again, similar, we're very on point here with our analysis, right. just different word choices.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I almost just used the word 80s because it's very much 80s, you know.
Yeah. Flowers, so, you're up.
All right, Flowers. Rejuvenated is my word for Flowers, because even though it wasn't the big commercial hit he was hoping for, I think he felt really, with the help of Elvis Costello and the other producers he was using, I think his creative juices were flowing again.
Yep.
And I think this was a really big, you know, and just, you know, I think he felt rejuvenated, and, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, he got his groove back in a way. And, you know, the song, I mean, I think, you know, the first 8 songs on that record are great. You know, they're really good McCartney songs. And yeah, he had help from Elvis Costello, but, you know, a lot of those songs are his. And yeah, he's just, I think he was rejuvenated for that.
Good word. My word is also an R word also, yeah. But a good word to describe that period and that album. My word is renaissance.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Because I think it really begins a renaissance period for Paul. Okay. The getting the Hofner bass back involved.
Right.
This is Paul's renaissance period. This is the beginning of his renaissance period. And becoming okay with his past and embracing right. his past and playing half of his set list to be Beatles music. This is Flowers in the Dirt, My Brave Face. I mean, that's like a Beatles song, okay?
Right.
So Flowers in the Dirt, to me, is the beginning of the Renaissance period for Paul.
And, I like it.
Yeah, and that's why I chose, you know, everything about that record to me has a feel of a, you know, Renaissance period, rejuvenated Renaissance. I think it's the same feeling here.
Cool. All right, off the ground for you.
Off the ground, earthy. I had a hard time coming up with a word for this one, earthy, because there's a lot of kind of there's a lot of themes in this record, you know, that are very kind of
right.
more world encompassing, feel good, like kind of globalizing messages, you know,
right.
peace in the neighborhood, come on, people looking for changes. So thinking about all those things, I'm like, okay, earthy is the kind of word right. I can come up with. Because again, political stuff, again, he had dabbled into this record a little bit. Social, I almost kind of should have went with right. social.
Right.
Because it's that.
I think that's a better word than political.
Right. You know, social.
Yeah.
Social. And that's, but I went with earthy because it's just the word I chose.
Right.
But I think just that's the feel. It's the feel of the album, right. you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I guess you probably could have chose organic as well, maybe. But
that word's coming up later for another album.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. My word for this is a misstep.
And well, we know God knows we know that's how you feel.
But the misstep, when I say misstep, I mean because I just think he just chose the wrong songs for the album. I mean, half of the album, you know, I've gone on record saying this could have been a masterpiece of an album if he just, you know, rearranged. He took all those social songs out, and yeah, there were some other ones that he left off, like Long Leather Coat and Big Boy Biggering, or social or comment on social commentary right. as well. But you know, the songs like Sweet Sweet Memory, Style, you know, stuff like that. I just think it would have made it a better record. Kicked Around No More. Absolutely. And I just think it would have just made it a better record. But you know, it is what it is.
We misstep. Got the, it's a misstep. Yeah, it's a misstep. It is. All right.
Yeah. Flaming Pie. All right. Inspired. You know, coming off the heels of Beatles anthology, you know, all that nostalgia. I mean, that could have been another word too. I was thinking of using sure. nostalgia. I think he really was inspired by this. And I think this shows on the record Flaming Pie. I mean, you know, also having Jeff Lynne coming in and helping, you know, produce the record after, you know, working with him on, you know, the Beatles anthology as well. I think he was just very much inspired for this record. And, you know, I think he even said that, you know, he wanted to, you know, after that, he wanted to make a really good record. And I think he was inspired from, you know, talking about the Beatles and going down memory lane.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So you said inspired for Flaming Pie. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely inspired. You know, he was, and he admits that. Right. He admits that. my word for Flaming Pie is organic.
There you go. Love it.
Yeah, because I think the record is very organic. It was produced over the period of a couple of years. It wasn't
right.
wasn't forced. It wasn't rushed, as we talked
exactly.
about.
Exactly. Exactly.
This was produced over a long period of time.
Yeah, and he was told by the studio that take your time. We don't need anything from.
Don't need one. So he's going back to songs as far back as 1971 with Great Day.
Great Day. Yeah. Beautiful Night from the
80s. Okay. So he did not rush this album. It was organically produced. He used some friends to make it. He brought Jeff Lynne in again because, right. again, interesting, you know, Jeff Lynne and him were, you know, they didn't really work. He was George's guy.
Right.
So, and that was one of the kind of things that if you think of, you know, that was Jeff Lynne is George's guy.
But then
guy.
Again, to Jeff Lynne was also the hot producer. He was the it producer, you right, know, at the by, time.
But I think by this period that had kind of cooled off a little bit, you know.
Okay, late, fair enough.
By the mid to late 90s, I don't think Jeff was still knocking. He was, you know, Tom Petty, Full Moon Fever, The Wilburys,
right.
Roy Orbison's album, Mystery Girl.
Yeah.
So I think he was still the guy that, I mean, listen, he produced Free as a Bird and Real Love. So, I mean, yeah. But it's just interesting to see that after the anthology experience, Paul was like, okay, I'll work with you on my own record. And I think it's organic because Paul, you know, he doesn't just use one person for all of his records, even as up to as late as New, four different producers. He uses George Martin on a couple tracks, Jeff Lynne.
Right.
So Flaming Pie definitely is an album organically made over the period of a few years. And I think that's a good word to describe it.
Okay. Driving Rain.
Cluttered. cluttered. That's another one I was struggling with to figure out with, you know, good, you know, again, all McCartney records are good. It's just levels to good to great. I think it's just too cluttered. It's too cluttered of a record. It's, it could have been trimmed. It really could have been.
Right. Yeah. Agreed. You know, in that era, you know, CD is king and you got all this time on a CD, you know, bands were just filling these CDs with more material than what they really needed to. You know, a couple times, I think Metallica had a couple times covered the whole CD, you know, with their albums.
So you've got 80 minutes available. That doesn't mean you have to use 80 minutes.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, my word, I got mediocre.
Okay.
Myself, good songs. They're just, I don't think they're up to his standard. No. You know what I mean? So yeah, I just, you know, and the whole album. Yeah. And like I said, that just too much. I mean, if I could have, if we could have used two words, I probably would have said too much, you know, because there's just, you could have trimmed this album down. You could have trimmed probably
10 or 11.
Four songs off of this album. For sure. Easy. Yeah, exactly. Just forget Freedom, you know.
Forget Freedom.
Yeah. You know, Freedom, in my opinion, should have just been a single, a non-album single. The proceeds go to, you know, the families of all, you know, of all the victims.
And I even, as much as I like it now, revisiting it, Rinse the Raindrops should have been like a standalone. It should not have been on the album. Or fair. An edited version of it on the album. To throw a 10-minute jam onto an album that's already kind of long already, like maybe make that like a separate single, you know, and have an edited version on the album and do the 10-minute thing as a single. I think Rinse the Raindrops, although it's great, I just think it bogs the record down too much.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Chaos. It's my turn. I put Masterpiece. It's just from top to finish. There's albums, you know, a lot of times you'll have at least one or two songs that you might not skip, but maybe you just don't want to listen to. But from this album, there's nothing that I want to get rid of or skip on this album. Every song I think is good to great. And I just have a great time listening to this album. Obviously we know the story. He was pushed, you know, Nigel really just, you know, let him have it, you know, and gave him his 2 cents. And you know, what came out of it is, in my opinion, a masterpiece.
And when he's challenged, you get a masterpiece. You know, he's challenged or he's gone through stuff. It's, he gets a band on that. That's why people like it. When you look at the average fan's perspective, they're going to go Band on the Run. Why? Because he was challenged. It was a very traumatic process of making that record. Tug of War, off the heels of John passing away, Wings ending, you know, Chaos. These are albums where he's been challenged in some way, spiritually, personally, professionally. And it's no shock that these are, those records are high watermarks in his career.
Yeah. Cool.
What was your word? My word for Chaos was reflective.
I almost used that for something else, but
reflective, because I think a lot of that record, I mean, you know, Chaos and the Creation in the Backyard. I mean, the album cover has a picture of him with, taken by his brother Mike.
Right.
It's also a lyric in the song, Looking Through the Backyard of My Life.
In my life, right.
The theme of that record seems to be very reflective. Too Much Rain.
Right.
You know, these are songs that kind of make you think a little bit. So I've always felt that Chaos is a very reflective sounding record.
Cool. Very cool. Then we move to Memory, Almost Full, and your turn.
Loud. it's the only one I could think of. Yes. That's 2 times you had the same. Yes. Loud.
It's loud.
It's just too damn loud. It's got great songs. It's got, I mean, The End of the End is a fantastic song, but just some of those songs, the beginning of it. And we talked about this when we ranked it, you know, from the opening, from the opening drum beat, which isn't really a drum beat. It's just foot tapping before dance tonight. It's just too loud.
Yeah. You know, you're listening to it on headphones and all of a sudden you hear doo 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 and you're like, what?
Whoa! Take these things and throw them into the road.
Right, you're automatically looking for the volume, you know.
Oh my god!
I mean, like, you, to your point, great songs on this record, and I wish I could have put a word on there to reflect that. But it's just, as soon as you turn it on, yeah, it's just, it's a really loud mix.
That one, God, needs to be, somebody just remix that thing properly.
Right, right.
You know, I'm not a fan of the archive series continuing past Flaming Pie, but right. If it ever did, boy, it would be nice.
You need to turn that, you know, put some knobs down, you know what I mean? When they're when it's on the council.
Yeah, remix this album completely, please. But if it was to continue past Flaming Pie, we'll see.
Yeah. New. Yeah. I put youthful.
Okay.
You know, and not only just because of the songs, but also because of the four producers. I mean, these normally Paul's working with contemporaries. This is really the first time he's working with younger producers. All of them were born in 69 or later. Martin and one other was 69. And then you got Johns and Epworth. I think they were born like 74, 75. So you got these four producers that are 20 to 25, almost 30 years younger than Paul McCartney, you know, helping him produce and giving him a more youthful, I think, sound on his record.
Yeah. Very good. My word is in the similar vein. I said modern, new, for the same reason that you said. It's a modern sounding record. To that, pros and cons, McCartney stalwarts may not like that because of the use of the auto tuning on some of these tracks and some of the experiment, you know, like on a song like Appreciate, which I'm really not a big fan of, but clearly he was trying to reach a more youthful and modern audience with this record. And here we are 7-8 years later. I think it holds up pretty damn well still. I listen to it a lot still, and I think it's a great modern and youthful sounding record.
Cool. Very good. We're going to Egypt Station next. I think you are taking this one.
Yeah, this one was a very hard one for me to figure out. I only figured it out this morning, and I listened to a couple tracks just trying to get a feel for the album.
Right.
And the only word I could really kind of come up with was content. I came up with content, mainly just for some of the songs on there, really, mainly driven by, Happy With You, which is, that's a favorite of Tom's and mine off of Egypt Station. Again, there's themes all over this album. I don't know. And despite repeated warnings and People Want Peace, which are, you know, not great. They're good to rate. Some of them not. Tom doesn't really like People Want Peace. But I just think content is a record that was, in comparison to McCartney 3, which we'll talk about, this was a record that was produced over the period of time. It was thought out. It was planned. Right. So it's a very contented sounded Paul McCartney to me on this record. Confidant,
right.
Dominoes, you know, it's a very, to me, that's the feel. When I think about Egypt Station now, it's a very contented sounding McCartney.
Okay. I have a Re-Event.
Re-Event?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Re-Eventing himself.
Reinvent.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly. You know, with the help of Greg Kirsten and Ryan Tedder, I think he's taking, you know, and all the songs that we got after the release of Egypt Station.
Oh, man.
You know, exactly. You know, you got him, you know, he's the same Paul McCartney, but then now he's continuing the youthful producers to help reinvent his sound. And I think, you know, using modern skills and his retro skills and you know, blending those two together, you know, I think he's reinventing himself and reinventing his sound, you know what I mean? And bringing it into for a new generation of fans, you know, I think he was they were all successful at that.
Very successful. It was continuing that trend very, very much so. And it's a different sounding record than New.
Right.
So he used the same principles and saying, I want to try to stay kind of hip.
Modern, maybe. Yeah. And hip. Yeah, of course.
But it sounds like it's done more in a more traditional McCartney ballady style compared to New.
Yeah. I mean, compared to like, cause you could say, you know, the same thing for Press to Play in a way, cause he's sounding very modern for that, but it just didn't work as well for my ears.
No.
To how Egypt Station sounds.
Or new.
Yeah. I think it was just more successful, you know, reinventing and coming up with more of a modern sound for those albums rather than, you know, what he did for Press to Play. All right, McCartney 3, here we come, the end of the road.
The end of the end.
You know, there's only one word I could think of when I think of McCartney 3, and that's COVID, because we wouldn't have got this album if it wasn't for COVID.
Bingo.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, again, you know, he wasn't going to make an album this last year.
No.
And we got this album because of the pandemic, unfortunately. And I'm glad circumstances are what they are. I'm glad we got a new record because it was 2 years in between records. And we can't say that very often these days.
Right. Yeah. It's happened, but doesn't happen too often. Again, I was still on the heels of the Egypt Station stuff and all the associated bonus tracks that creeped out over the year after. Egypt Station drops in September of 2018.
Right.
You're getting leftover material from those sessions as late as November of 2019 with In a Hurry and Home Tonight.
Right.
So the Egypt Station machine is very much still alive. And
Sliding too, as we found out, is also from, could also be from those Egypt Station sessions.
Right. So now to get this record that comes out at the end of 2020,
right,
kind of going to my word choice for McCartney 3, that word is impromptu.
Because
it was tying into Tom's point, it's we have it because of COVID, right?
Right.
So it's an impromptu record that we didn't think was coming. And you know, of course, the hype machine starts, and once it starts, as we know, it just doesn't stop, and the formats and everything. But it's an impromptu record that is, I will say now on the record, is as good as Egypt Station. I'm back on board with it. I was really.
Well, it's funny because you say things like that, you know, and it's just like, yeah, I mean, when you're listening to the record, you know, you think, okay, yeah, this is great. And then you go back and listen to Egypt Station. It's like, okay, well, maybe this is a little bit better. But then you go back and listen to it. It's just a continuous cycle, you know.
Right. And because it's so hard to evaluate these records because they're very new in a lot of ways.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, Egypt Station.
You need more time to pass. I mean, we'll see how these records do 10 years from now.
Yeah, 10 years from now, you know, if Paul's still with us. You know, and he's still making albums, which I wouldn't put past him.
Right.
Come on. I can't wait for everything to open up again, because if he's, I think he's going to go back out on tour.
I almost can guarantee that he'll go back out on tour. He is just too stubborn to stop.
And I don't even think he'll lower the keys. I'm sure he's been practicing and practicing to make sure that he stays in shape. And listen, the second tours are announced, I'm sure we will be going.
Absolutely. Well, good, man. This was fun. I'm glad we were able to work this one out. It's nice to do something different from time to time than just talk about albums, you know, and songs. It's just fun to do something like this, I think.
Yeah, because it's a little exercise in how we think about the album. Okay, it's, you know, and you know, we're just coming up with a different way to talk, you know, different concepts, different ideas for shows, and that's all, you know. So I think it was a great topic, Tom. I'm really glad you pitched this one. Thank you, Three Sides of the Coin, for the idea.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. So, Andy, what you got going on? Is anything coming up with anything but the Beatles?
This month, Ethan and I are going to record our third show for Anything But the Beatles. And we're going to be discussing the Beach Boys' 1977 Love You album.
Interesting.
Which is a little bit of a funky McCartney 2-esque type of album.
In the
Beach Boys canon. Mm. Crazy, crazy record. And he and I are geeking up and getting our notes ready for that one, which we'll record sometime and post by the end of this month. So, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Very good. Yeah. So, you know, we had Talk More Talk. We recently had Fernando Perdomo on to talk about the Ramon album. And we also did another addition to our Another Listen series. And this time we talked about the Bad Boy album.
Right.
Bad Boy album. I mean, did it deserve all the criticism it got from the critics? And it wasn't a very successful. It kept the downward spiral for Ringo, unfortunately. And that might be a future topic on Talk More Talk too. Is, you know, what happened with Ringo's career? Why did it take that downward spiral? Why didn't the success continue?
Too much partying.
Maybe, you know, the formula after, you know, Goodnight Vienna changed, you know, the producers changed.
I hope that Rotor Graveyard is really a gem. I think
Rotor Graveyard's got some great stuff on there, you know, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, that downward spiral started with that album, I think.
For whatever reason. I don't know, but I think that one really, I think it starts there, but I think Rotor Graveyard needs to be really kind of held up a little bit higher. I'm not saying rank it as good as Vienna or Ringo, but I would put it right underneath that. I really would.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it starts off good with Dose of Rock and Roll.
Oh,
I think I'm not the biggest fan of that one, but
which one? Cooking or Hey Baby?
Yeah, Cooking. You know, I'll Still Love You. I like George Harrison, you know.
Yep.
I think is good. You know, Pure Good.
Pure gold is awesome.
Yeah. You don't know me at all. You know, so there's some quality stuff on here.
That got a vinyl re-release a year ago. Did you grab that?
Yeah. Friday Music put that Friday, up.
Yeah, that was good. I think that that was a good topic though for Talk More Talk. But Bad Boy was right after this one, right?
That was 78. So that was after Rotor Graveyard and Ringo the Fourth.
Oh, Ringo the Fourth was 77.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Atlantic dropped Ringo.
He couldn't even get a label.
I mean, so, you know, he's going from label to label, producer from producer. You know, by that time, he's not even getting songs from the other four, other three.
But then Stop and Smell the Roses was
supposed to be that big comeback, you know, unfortunately, but, you know, we know what happened with Lennon. You know, we didn't get a song from Lennon on that album, but, you know, we got. You know, he got back in the top 40 with Rack My Brain.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, the songs from Paul I don't think are as strong as, like, say, 6 o'clock.
No, you know, Attention's a good. I like Attention's
a good song. You know, and it fits Ringo, of course. You know,
I mean, they even had the whole video for it with the whole.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, directed by Kevin Godley.
Ten CC.
Yeah. So
that was a really cool topic that you guys. Yeah. On Talk More Talk, and I enjoy when you guys do this. I can't see them all the time live, but I like when you guys do that revisited series. You did one on Cloud Nine a few months ago.
Well, we started it with Ringo the Fourth,
right?
And it ended up being one of our most viewed shows.
You know what, you guys, by picking, like, everybody's talked about that. Well, there's only so few Lennon albums, so you've tackled them. McCartney, tackled. I like that you tackle kind of some of the George stuff and the Ringo stuff, because those are albums that are worthy of looking at, because John and Paul's solo careers get so much attention, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's so limited. You guys have exhausted those. So people are like, well, why are they talking about Bad Boy? Well, I mean, who else has really revisited
exactly. And matter of fact, someone made that comment during the show. It's like, who else is going to talk about it, you know?
So. And I like it because these are albums I really haven't listened to much. I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm not the biggest solo Ringo fan. I'm not. But I have them. But when I listen to them and I kind of listen to your guys' opinions, I'm like, I'm going to listen to that song again. So I really enjoy that series. Yeah. So good job there, TMT gang.
Thank you, Andy. So what do we got going on? We got, let's see here. By the time this airs, our Ranking the Track series is
over.
All over.
When the music's over, as Jim sang.
And we just want to say thank you for everybody that joined us for this long adventure. It was a lot of fun. I tell you, I love the comments. I love the people that put their rankings in. Thank you so much. The people that messaged us saying, hey, you know, either you forgot this song or what about this song? You know, that's fine. And, you know, and people send us our Susan's, you know, send in lists, you know, she helped us out, you know, that was just great. I mean, everybody's involvement was excellent. You know, even the people that didn't really care for it, you know, that's fine too.
We love you too.
But yeah, but you listened and that's all that matters. You know, that's all that really matters. And, you know, we've got other things in the works that we'll announce soon, and we're gonna have more fun with the with this live stuff. And yes, you know, eventually we keep saying that we're gonna eventually just go all live, and we probably will. We will soon.
We're not there yet, but we will.
Yeah, we got a lot of great shows coming up. You know, with authors and with other podcasters, and you know, just Andy and ourselves, and we're gonna have a lot of fun with that. So, Andy, anything you want to shout out before we sign off here?
I would just make sure that you subscribe to YouTube.
There you go.
Our YouTube channel,
yes.
Please.
Getting close to 600. We're almost there. And we want to continue growing the YouTube channel for sure. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. And he said the YouTube channel, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney Podcast. Please check us out and subscribe. The website, twolegspodcast.com. Email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. And you can find us on any podcasting outlet that exists, thanks to our friend Andy here, all the hard work he put into to getting us there, because you know, when he popped on, it wasn't easy at first. I don't know what that whole iTunes thing.
Remember the iTunes thing? Yeah. Oh my God! Because of the artwork, your artwork is right. Too big for iTunes to be accepted. I'm texting Dave, and I'm like, what the frig? I need artwork that works for this thing. But getting the iTunes was big to get on there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So just expanded the audience.
You know. And there's people that follow us in a video format, you know, on YouTube when we drop these. And then there's plenty of people that listen to us on audio. It's traditional podcast. So
yeah.
I get texts and emails and stuff from people, friends who like it. Right. They'll just listen to it when they drive. And that's even
what
we do. So it's not, you know, we're video and audio here.
Yep. Great. Okay, Andy, my friend. So we will see you next week. We're going to have a special guest. We're going to be talking McCartney lyrics with friend of the show, Matthew Streets. And that should be a lot of fun. We're going to just take our favorites. It's not necessarily song lyrics that we think are the best, but it's just our personal favorite McCartney lyrics. We'll probably do a top five and a couple honorable mentions in there as well. So that will be next week. So join us then. Everybody out there, thank you so much. We really enjoy you being here. And as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan Seaton.